Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. My guest today is Caroline Blazowski, nationally recognized as America's Healthy Home Expert. Caroline is an environmental consultant, home investigator, media personality, and the founder of My Healthy Home, a company dedicated to creating healthier living environments. With over 30,000 home investigations and more than two decades of experience, she's a leading authority on indoor air quality and healthy building practices. Caroline's work has been featured across AARP, SiriusXM, Good Housekeeping, and many more. You've probably heard her somewhere. I'm glad she's here today. Today, she's here to share what every architect should know about designing homes that make people healthier. Caroline Blazowski, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you for having me. That was such a nice introduction. I appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome. It's good to have you here.
I'm excited.
Me too. Before we talk about healthy homes and the things that you do and the things that we should be paying attention to as architects, I want to know more about you. I want a little bit more context about who Caroline is. So when did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started in this journey of healthy homes?
Yeah, it was a crazy story, believe it or not. My first job, I was totally in a different realm. So I was in radio, so you can appreciate that. I had done radio since I was 16 years old, worked at radio stations all through college, and I thought this is where I'm going to end up. So I was doing an internship. My first internship was with Howard Stern in New York. So that's kind of always an interesting tidbit.
Wow.
And I got to see sort of this media guru, right? Put things together, and it was an amazing place to work.
That must have been some experience.
It was crazy. So, and then I started working in New York City in production in an audio and video studio. And then all of a sudden I had this apartment in Hoboken, and as young kids, like we are, they would come in and spray pesticide and do whatever. And we would just let the maintenance people come in and say, "Hey, how you doing? Yeah, you're going to spray something, blah, blah, blah."
Right.
And I started to develop some weird, what I call back then, some environmental allergies. I think it was kind of stomach stuff and weird things. And I ended up going to a doctor, and he's like, "Look, I think you have allergies." And I'm like, "Well, I've never had allergies in my whole life. Why do I have allergies now?" And no one could explain it. And that started the rabbit hole of getting into this field. And I just completely switched everything I was doing and started going back, and it just, I had a diagnostic tool in my tool belt that I never realized I'd ever had. And I ended up going back to all types of HVAC school, IAQ classes, anything I could take back. This is 25 years ago. So, this was not a hot thing back then. Nobody knew what mold was in a home or allergies in a home. It was just foreign. So I started on that and went back for every possible educational class I could take. And here I am today, ending up, as one of the top experts in my field. So it's really interesting how things get us going in a different direction.
Yeah. It's not uncommon that a story will, in terms of somebody's career and somebody's passion, that it starts with something that impacts them, right? That something negative happens that you overcome, and you want to make sure that other people don't have to experience the same thing that you've experienced.
And it seems in our field, in the healthy home field, that seems to be a story for a lot of the people that get into the space, or they had a child get sick and they didn't have the answers. It just seems to be a thread that leads through it. But whatever it was, I truly, truly love my career and love the field, and I'm happy to be here. So that's the best part.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy you're here too. Our audience are thousands of architects. Many of them are residential architects. So you're talking directly to the people who are designing homes today. And so I'm really excited about this conversation because maybe, you know, we can share some things that maybe some of our audience are not aware of. But I want to start with the basics. Let's start with, like, what do you consider, quote unquote, healthy home? How do you define that?
I think it always starts with the occupants, right? And why they end up at your doorstep. Whether you're an architect or you're an environmental consultant, you're getting this customer that's coming to you, and everybody has special needs. And you know this better than I do. Like, when you're building something, everybody's got a different reason as to why they want to construct something or devise a house in the way they want it. So I kind of let the customer always lead me. And the reason may be that they had a health issue, or their child's got a health issue, or they just want to be healthy, or they're following, you know, strict protocols. They're athletes, they're musicians, they're some type of artist. I see so many different types of clients. So it's interesting. So always kind of going with what the client wants and listening to them, I think, is really important, first and foremost, like really being a good listener.
So when you talk about healthy home, so you're talking to your clients first to determine what they consider a healthy home?
Yeah, well, what their need is, you know, and then I'll interact with my perspective, right? So I believe that 85% of disease, at least, is caused by us as humans and what we do and how we environmentally react or interact with the space that we live in. So investigating homes over 25 years, I've got a lot of experience, and I haven't just done homes in the US. I've done homes abroad and in Canada and Australia and in Europe, and seeing the differences that happen and then seeing what we're faced with here, especially in the United States, right? We build very differently here, a very throwaway culture. A lot of the things that we bring into our homes aren't necessarily the healthiest from building product standpoint. So looking at, okay, where is my client exposed to in their particular environment? And I usually want to see, I don't expect things to be perfect because that doesn't exist in any home. Like, the minute you think you have a perfect home, if you're an architect, if you're a builder, it just doesn't exist. There's no such thing. But it's sort of meeting most of the criteria and then trying to make sure that we don't have areas that are really unhealthy. So if we're talking about radon and carbon monoxide and mold and chemical load and building product selection, I want to make sure those things are not in a red range, right? Let's talk about it as green and red. The green being the safer, like, okay, there may be something that's off here, but the red being something that's really apparent that there's something wrong. And so that's what I'm looking for, those things that are really wrong and how I can fix them.
What are the most common issues that you're seeing during your investigations?
So it used to be, right, I did a lot of mold, and then molds became, we looked at mycotoxin because we know molds itself, they have abilities to contain what's called like a beta glucan or a protein on their shell. And that causes allergies in a lot of the populace. And it also can contribute to inflammation in the body. So we dealt with molds, and then we found out, oh, wait, molds produce a mycotoxin, this toxic gas or toxic particle that comes out of mold. And so then we started worrying about that. And then we started worrying about carbon monoxide. And though, even though we all talk about detection, that we have detectors, now we're realizing that that standard that we set CO for, or carbon monoxide for, is set way too high, and that people are developing all of these chronic conditions because of low level exposures. And then it became, oh, wait, we have energy efficient furnaces. Well, that's cool, right? But then we started to see, oh, wait, they have two heat exchangers in them and not one, like the old time furnaces always had a one heat exchanger. So now we had a two, and then we said, wait, so now we've got double the problem that people are exposed to carbon monoxide in these high efficiency furnaces. So then we said, uh-oh, let's start checking that out. And then we realized, oh, wait, these furnaces are coming into problems much earlier in their career. They're not lasting 30 years without a problem. You could get a problem a year out. So then we started looking at, okay, what else do we have? We've got chemical loads and like building products and volatile organics. And then we started saying, uh-oh, now these houses are built so tight when we have proteins from pets and 500,000 million skin cells from humans that shed. All this stuff is getting stuck in the environment, and the humidity levels are high in the buildings because of energy efficiency. And now we've got problems with that. So to put it in a nutshell, there is so much going wrong in structures that it's almost overwhelming. I mean, we have a lot to do. And anybody who's listening to this as an architect, there's a lot of responsibility falling on your shoulders and falling on my shoulders. And we have a lot of problems with building nowadays and how we operate in those structures. So listen up.
Yeah. Well, when my wife and I first bought our first home, it was built in 1934. And it was a stucco house.
Nice.
In Westchester County, New York. cute little house, 900 square feet when we bought it. Stucco on the outside, you know, true cement stucco, plaster on the inside. Mm. The house was filled with mold when we bought it. Mm-mm. Any builder would have torn it down. And we did months of cleanup. And
did it flood or what was the cause of the mold?
No, it was not well maintained. Mm-hmm. It was a house that leaked over the years. The people that owned it were hoarders. The house, it had never been maintained and it was 80 years old when we bought it. And it was in very rough shape. And anyone else other than two architects would have torn it down. But it was beautiful, right? It was this cute little house in the woods of Westchester County. And we restored it. We did lots of work to clean it up. And we did lots of refinishing, tried to stay true to the original home, did an addition to it. The reason I'm bringing it up is that house had lots of air coming through the walls and through the windows. The original, when we first bought it, it had the original windows too, which, you know, rattled in their frames. And we had our first son before we did any work to the house. We had cleaned it up, but the house still had no insulation in it and the windows rattled. The first winter with our son, he slept in a snowsuit. The house got so cold during the winter. And, you know, two young, crazy architects eventually fixed it all. But the reason I bring it up is because that house was built in a time when homes sort of had air running through them. And today, homes are built to be very, very sealed up. So there's issues with the original way homes were built, and there's issues with the way homes are built today. What are your thoughts about that, just in terms of the way we're building today, and we're making homes so airtight that that's a good thing if you know what you're doing, but it's also it could become an issue because a house does not have that exchange of air.
Well, I think you bring up two good points. So if you look at the old structure, right, and that's why I was asking questions, like when you look at the old plaster and you look at a house that was built with stucco, what was the common thread in that? It was that it wasn't maintained, right?
Right.
So the way the occupants dealt with it, if like I'm looking around me as I speak to you and I am in a building that I bought for my business that is stucco and it's got the old flooring, right? It's got radiators. It has like the beautiful aesthetics. It's, you know, originally built in the 1800s and was added on, but it's not in that condition,
right?
So the occupant in that circumstance let the house deteriorate, which allowed these things like, let's say, mice and mold and leaks and all that stuff to occur. So the first thing is always—
that first house had it all.
Right. So it comes down to like, this is a responsibility of the occupants. I mean, you can have the best structure, whether it's energy efficient or if it's an old 1940 structure, if you're not going to maintain it, then don't be a homeowner because these things are constantly going to go, right? And they're always going to have to be fixed. And houses are a plethora of problems. And right when you think you have everything perfect, you have a water break, your refrigerator leaks, something happens, you know, maybe you have a blowback in your furnace, any of these things can happen. So maintenance is huge. I think it's not so much what the structure is, but it's that knowing as a homeowner, you have to maintain it. It's the first thing.
What can architects do today to make sure that we're doing it right? What are some of the things that we should, as home designers, be looking at in terms of making sure that we're doing things right?
Yeah. So I think that, and it's, you know, touching back on what we were just talking about is listening to the client and understanding your client and saying, look, if I build this house and it's got all these gizmos, and I always ask my clients this too, like if we're putting in sensor systems, which we do for indoor air quality, we can monitor almost anything now with technology and AI, which is very interesting. And we started doing that a couple of years ago. You have to assess the client, like, are they going to maintain something? Are they the type of person that wants all the technology and the bells and whistles, or are they simple? And I would think that that would apply to architecture just like it applies to my field. It's like, look, assess the client and don't give them too many things that they're not going to be able to keep up with. Give them what right. is fitting to them. Even though sometimes they come to you and they may say, hey, you know, I want this, I want that. I kind of back my clients up and kind of, I like to assess them first to kind of get an idea of who I'm really dealing with as a person so that I know what is going to work for them. Because overall, you want them to be successful, right? That's the goal. You want that client to be like, look, I'm totally thrilled with what you did. I'm on social media giving you 5-star reviews and I'm happy. And every day I go back to my house and it's my haven. And I think that's our job is to kind of hear the client, but then also be able to say, you know what? I don't think I'm going to put a million different technologies into this house because this client isn't into technology, right? They're more simple oriented. And then you have other people who want sensors for this and sensors for that. And they want a real commercial grade sensing system where they can sense, you know, down to this particular PPM of CO, and they want to know what's going on. So I think it's so different what we get. But yeah, like trying to really steer them in a direction that they're going to be happy is, I think, a challenge that we all face. But it's a good challenge.
What are some of the common mistakes you see in new construction?
Well, I think in new construction, people often go into it thinking that this is going to be perfect once they buy it. They just think, hey, I bought a house and now I'm not going to have any problems and it's turnkey and I'm going to go in. And that just does not exist with any structure. You're always going to have something that's got to be changed, that there's a problem. You know, once you get in, maybe, you know, the basement starts leaking. Maybe I've gotten clients where the tubs are leaking. You know, they call me and they're crying. They just bought a house. They moved in 6 months and now the house has problems. You get problems where you get climate now, all these storms come and you have issues. I had somebody who, this is a common one. So you do the construction, everything's going well, and the construction workers are throwing, they're doing tiling in the bathroom and they're throwing the tile down the drain. So now the new family moves in, and this is very common, it happens all the time. The new family moves in, decides, you know, I'm going to flush my toilets and live like a normal person in my house. And then guess what? The septic or the sewer backs up all over the brand new house, because they threw all the stuff down in there and they were too lazy to take it out. Same thing with ductwork. You know what ends up in your ductwork? You need to have that cleaned after construction, because we find sandwiches in there. I mean, you know, soda bottles, like, I mean, you name it, it's down in there. And it sounds so horrible. Like, why are these people throwing this down the chimney or down in the ductwork? But they do it. And so these types of things have to be addressed, because years later you end up having problems, or sometimes right away. And then I get called in and they're like, we just had this brand new house. It's perfect. And we've got issues. So no perfect. Get rid of that.
Do you work with architects and designers before construction, or are you only called in afterwards when there's a problem?
No, I prefer it. It's hard to get people to think healthy homes. It's becoming more prominent, and you know, people want to pick the products they're putting in and they want suggestions. So they'll call and I'll consult with the architect on what products I think would be best, whether it's caulking or flooring or, you know, drywall. And I have my particulars that I think are healthier. And then I'll give that recommendation to the builder or to the architect and help the client incorporate it in. So yes, it definitely happens. It's so much better to do it in the beginning, because once you know, you build and you put quiet floor systems in, or you put a zip system in, these have OSB in them. And I'm not a big fan of OSB. I'm a plywood girl. I've always said that. Plywood has a much better fortitude, if you will, of dealing with moisture control, allowing moisture to pass through the barrier, and then of course allowing it to hold up longer if it does get wet. So I still am open to someone convincing me otherwise about OSB or fiberboards or any of that, but I've always been anti them, and I've got too many clients that have sensitivities to the glues and the resins in them. So trying to plan that out ahead of time is more ideal, you know, if you can do it.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, RCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to rcat.com/Arcademy. That's ARCAT.com/ARCATEMY. That's ARCAT.com/Arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. When we're designing a house, we're following building code, but we all know that building code is really
bare minimum.
Right. It's the worst acceptable home you can build, right? So what should architects be doing beyond the building code? What should we be looking at? What should we be focused on beyond the building code to make sure that we're designing healthy homes?
Well, what comes to me right now, just like as we're talking sporadically, right off the cuff, I think lighting. I like a lot of lighting, and I usually use it as like, look, I like to see at least 30%. So if you had a room, and then I'd like to see 30% of that room be windows. And people go, well, why is that? Well, because light in itself is one, so valuable to our essence and health, our cellular essence, everything that we are beings comes from light. If we had no light, we would not be here. So our ability to look at light and be able to grasp the spectrums of the light, you know, so you're looking at your reds, your blues, your greens, is so imperative to our health. And a lot of the windows now, because we're trying to block out the UV, block out that light, concerns me because we need it, especially in workplaces. Like, we need to have those full spectrum, even in our lighting. Like, when we're looking at, there's a company I like, Chromalux, we're making lighting, and also BIOS lighting makes interesting lighting too, where we've got that full spectrum. And it's so important to our health of all those colors. So being able to have that light come in for health, being able to face the light, being able to face directions where that lighting, where the house is positioned, so that you're getting the rise of the sun in the morning and the setting of the sun is important. And then, of course, also from a health standpoint, all these microbiologicals that we worry about, molds and dust mites and all of these things, really don't like light. They like dark and dingy and kind of dreary places. So houses that are exposed to more light interior have less of those kinds of health issues. So, you know, just talking off the cuff, I think lighting is something that we just don't think enough about, for sure.
Yeah, lighting is interesting because, you know, I've talked to lighting experts on the show and we've done webinars on the health sides of natural light and artificial light. It's really amazing how important exposure to light is. And so many of us now, we work on computers, our lights are dim in our offices, we don't go outside as much as we used to. And you're seeing the impact on our health because of that. And it's a lot of it is directly related to light.
Yeah. And I mean, we can talk about it too, like with the newer windows, and you probably know more about this than I do, but they're trying to block out, even though the light is there and you have a window, the actual benefit of the light isn't able to come through because you've got all this argon gas and you've got the low E coatings and the things that are really preventing the health benefits of the light. So is there anything, I mean, because of energy efficiency, is there anything we can do to kind of make that lighting healthier from your perspective?
You can focus on artificial light that does similar things that the natural light can do. The different colors and the different locations of those lights as well. The different levels of light make a difference as well. So you can put lighting on timers and dimmers that happen automatically. So there's actually a rhythm that we experience with sun up and then the light coming across the sky and then coming back down.
Circadian rhythm,
you can replicate that with artificial light as well and impact your health by doing that.
Yeah, it's amazing. They say, like, we always were used to having like the recessed lighting in the ceiling, right? And that's right. No longer the theory. You actually want horizontal light. So lighting at the eye level so you can absorb the blues and the reds and the greens. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah. In terms of awareness, architects, that's part of our job to be aware of designing healthy and safe homes. And so we're actually trained as architects, we're trained to design healthy homes and healthy buildings and have continuing education to do so. But in terms of homeowners, do you see an increase, a rise in homeowner awareness of healthy homes? And what do you think is causing that, if so?
Yes. I mean, my business has over the years just grown and grown and grown. I mean, it's getting to the point now that I can't keep up because the doctors are sending their patients to us, right? The doctor's like, I can't solve this problem. Like, here's my client. So I like to give examples. So I had a client in New Jersey and she was sick for 5 years. I mean, feeling terrible, like achiness, flu-like symptoms, joints hurt, all this, you know, just really feeling bad, couldn't function, couldn't live her life. And her husband was fine. The kids were fine. Everybody's fine in the house, just not her. So it goes to the doctor for 5 years. They can't figure out anything. And then she's finally at her chiropractor and her chiropractor says, look, there's this woman on the East Coast. She does this. She kind of evaluates your home and your health symptoms and figures out, like, is there something here? So why don't you call her? And they did. And I did some air sampling, simple stuff, nothing crazy at first. And I started seeing fiberglass come back in the sample. So I'm like, well, that's weird. And I'm looking around the house and I'm not seeing exposed fiberglass. It's not uncommon to see it, especially if people have open batting. Like, so, you know, a lot of people won't close up a space like a basement or an attic and they'll have a lot of exposed fiberglass. And if the ductwork's there, it'll pick it up and transfer it. So I'm always trying to tell people, like, don't have open fiberglass insulation in your home. But there wasn't any of that. So I said, let me take a look in the ductwork. And I have a company that I work with, Air Duct Cleaning Solutions. They're amazing. We've worked together for, God, I don't know, since we were kids, 25 years at least. And I said to Chris, put a camera in there and I'd like to see what their ductwork looks like. And I usually do what I call like the colonoscopy of your home. It's like the, you know, everybody goes to the doctor for a colonoscopy when you come to me and I'm going to do one on your home. And so I take a look and sure enough, we looked in and the plenums and the interior ductwork was all lined with fiberglass that looked like the most disgusting thing you've ever seen, with mold growing in it and pounds of dust. And I put a picture of it on LinkedIn and it literally got 18,000 views. I mean, it was insane. Like, this thing went viral because it was so disgusting. And yeah, so we had that all replaced and she's feeling better. And like, this is the type of stuff that you just don't assimilate or associate with your home environment, but these are the things that can make you sick. And yeah, so we were talking about anyway, about architects, but these are the types of things you need to be on the lookout for when you're, you know, designing something. Like, don't be designing ductwork that's got insulation on the interior. It's like a bad plan. Like, stick with real hardy product. Like, metal is the best, right? I hate flex duct. So, I mean, I know we use it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, flex duct is not good either, because if there is moisture in the ducts, it finds the low spot and it just sits there and it becomes moldy. And
It's like fodder. It's like, and those little crevices, you know, it's like the slinky and all the stuff gets embedded, impacted in there. And the mold says, hey, I'm going to live in this. But that's like an interesting point, right? Like, architects need to, the HVAC is always the afterthought. And that's your heart and lungs of the home. So it really should be built around that system and building the best HVAC system and then building the home, in my opinion, right? I do it backwards.
Yeah.
But that's going to allow you to have the best air quality, and that's important. So
yeah,
taking that into consideration in the forefront before.
Yeah. We have a very big problem in this country and probably throughout the world, because there are millions of homes being built by home builders that are not built at the highest quality as possible. They're not really being built at the level that we're just talking about. And at the same time, there are millions of people who are sick. And a lot of those people who are sick, like you're talking about, don't even know why. It's just this chronic illness that they have and they don't know where it's coming. They go to the doctor and the doctor says there's nothing wrong with them. And then that's coming from the homes that are being built and millions of people are living in. And I believe that in the next few years, if it's not already, it's going to be an epidemic that's going to become an issue that's going to have to be addressed.
I love it. You're giving me the little goosebumps, because I mean, this is what I've been saying for like 20 years. We see it. We know that there's this disease. I don't know what you want to call it, because we don't know even know where it's coming from. I assimilate a lot of it to the OSB and the MDF and the engineered products. We know that homeowners move into these homes and they get chronically sick and they're sensitive to these building products. And I agree with you, but look how long, right? We talk about asbestos. Look how long it took to place asbestos as a problem, right? And so we're fighting an industry that we know it's there. I know it's there, but getting them to change, it's getting worse, not better. We're going to plastic piping. We're going to, you know, using more of the engineered flooring and the engineered products and the vinyls, and it's not getting better. And I'm hoping that it will, but we have no governing body that says, hey, this stuff's bad for us, right? We don't have an FDA or an EPA that governs building construction. It's just a free-for-all out there. It's just scary, right?
Yeah, it is scary. And it's something that I believe doing this, right? Talking about it and getting the word out there, a lot of the work that you do is communicating this to the world, is making a difference. The problem is that you have a building industry that is a very large industry with lobbies and lobbyists. And right, it's all based on money. It's all built on how much money they can make with each home. And I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they are building thousands of homes around here. Everywhere you look, there's a farm being turned into thousands of homes. And they're all being built in 2-3 weeks. And you know, going back to the HVAC system that you talked about, when architects design a home, they want to design a healthy home. They want to design the proper HVA system. They want to spend the money on the proper lighting for healthy, right? As a base, right? As a standard, they want to do that. But because when they design that, the home gets so relatively expensive compared to what someone can go down the street for and buy a brand new house for $300,000, it's hard for an uneducated homeowner or a misinformed homeowner, let's say, to compare those and say, oh, I just can't afford that house, right? Because I can buy this other house that's bigger, right? And has the 3-car garage and all the things that I want. You're going to design me a smaller house that has, you know, nicer materials and better systems, but those systems I can't see. I'd rather have the granite countertops and the 3-car garage.
Yeah, it's a quantity versus quality. They don't understand. Well, they're starting to because
they are.
Homeowners end up in these houses that I call junk. Okay. And I have no problem saying a new house by some of these homeowners, home builders are just junk. And I don't care if you're paying $1 million for it. I mean, up here in New Jersey, I see houses that are millions of dollars and they're junk.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So you have to look at it from a perspective of it's not what you're paying for. It's you have to have the eye to go in. And sometimes simplicity is best. Like having a simpler house with better products is way better than having, like you saying, all these amenities that are going to break and not hold up anyway and then cause you nothing but problems. I mean, like think about an attached garage, right? We know more and more that attached garages are actually really problematic to our health and to the fact that they increase your risk of leukemia substantially. The more cars you keep in a garage and the more cars you start in a garage, and then you're prone to storing all kinds of chemicals and gasoline. That was never the goal. Like an attached garage is not supposed to be a storage space for your home. Your garbage pit for everything that you want not in the home, it's still attached to your home. All the chemicals from that space come into your home. So you're much better off having maybe a one-car garage and then having a shed, an area where you can keep your chemicals outside in a shed. So making these types of decisions is really important. And that's what an architect's going to help you to do. I mean, I'm totally for, I went back to the BAC. I went to Boston Architectural College. So I got a degree in sustainable design architecture, which wasn't easy for me because I did not have a background in architecture as an undergrad. So I went back for a degree and oh my gosh, like I have such an appreciation for architects because I went through that program. So but I also know that they were pushing a lot of things there that were LEED oriented. And being in that program, I was like challenging the professors because I was like, look, just because this is LEED certified or this is, says it's low VOC, it doesn't mean it's good for us. Just because something's green, and I'm putting my fingers up in quotes, does not mean it's healthy. You know, there's a lot of things that are chemicals like turpentine comes from natural sources, apinine, D-limonene, which is citrus, lavender, eucalyptus, a lot of pine products, they all have volatile organics, right? Our body doesn't know the difference between a synthetic volatile and a natural one, but it knows too much, right? If you have too much. So just because something's natural and someone tells you it's natural or it's greener doesn't mean it's necessarily healthy for you. So you have to really look at products and their health and how much they're going to outgas and, you know, how inert they are and what kind of products they're going to put into the home once you utilize them. So looking at health is a different perspective. So if you can find an architect that's more focused on that, and I've met a few now that are really good. There's a couple groups like out of Philadelphia that are really focusing on the health. I think that's where we're going. That's my opinion.
Yeah. There's a big difference between a healthy home and a sustainable home, right? They're two totally different things. Sometimes they overlap, but just
very
because
rarely.
You have one doesn't mean you have the other. Yeah. Let's end this on a positive note. Here, I'm going to ask you about the future. How do you see the future? What innovations excite you most about what's happening? You see anything out there that you like, that you see that might be moving in a positive direction?
Oh, everything. I mean, I think we are moving and I think we have transitioned from the green movement. When I started my company 25 years ago, I saw the need for the healthy home movement and we've transitioned to that. That's the direction we're going. Whether you go to the building shows, whether you go to the Consumer Electronics Show, everything's focused on health, right? Health and wellness, and that correlates back to the house. So yes, like sensor systems, like being able to, we sense like, you know, your CO, carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, your TVOC gases, like being able to see the house in the big picture, I think is so promising. I mean, there's so much stuff going on. And then on the building side, we're seeing so many more people step into this place of this healthy home and like trying to actually build for health. Clients are requesting it. Clients are coming, you know, they have needs. We've got a lot of more occupants now that have special needs pertaining to their health, whether that's like a heart problem, allergies, asthma. Kids have, you know, all kinds of autoimmune diseases now. So being able to design that house around those is becoming like a big deal. So yeah, there's so much happening. It's amazing.
And back to those millions of builder homes, I think there's a huge opportunity for architects, residential architects who are listening to not only focus on that market, right, of these houses, because these houses that are being built around me today in 10 years are going to need a full renovation or a teardown.
Yes.
I mean, they're junk. Mm-hmm. And so architects could very easily, from a business side, focus on that market of renovating and retrofitting these builder homes to be healthier and to have better systems and better materials in the future when they do need to be renovated. You can focus on them and there's millions of them. So it's, the market is unlimited, essentially. So it's a very big opportunity for residential architects and designers.
I think too, I mean, they're using a lot of these systems, right? And if you look at basements in particular, where they're using like the paneled systems where you've got multiple layers, that becomes very challenging because when something goes wrong, and one thing I can guarantee you, it's not if, it's when you will have a leak in your home. It is a guaranteed. You're having water and you're going to have a mold problem. That's over all the years and all the houses that I've seen. This is like a guarantee. So the first thing, and I'd like to say this just for your audience and anyone listening, go and get a rider on your homeowner's policy that ensures you have mold coverage and leak coverage. They are no longer covering that, and you find out in a very bad way that you're not covered after you've had the leak.
That's great advice.
So put a rider. It costs very little. I mean, we're talking like, you know, a few dollars. It's going to add to your policy. I have a $50,000 rider on my house so that if you have a water damage leak or you've got mold, you're covered. So just, it's like the easiest thing to do. Just add it to your policy. It's simple and smart.
That's great advice, Caroline. Let's wrap up with our final question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I guess listen to your clients and look into different avenues. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but when you're networking, look to physicians, look to functional medicine providers, look to environmental consultants, because we have a lot of clients that are looking for healthy alternatives in building. And I think that's a really good resource. It's not something that an architect would traditionally like say, why am I going to, you know, befriend a doctor or make a relationship with an environmental consultant? That's because we actually are seeing people who, one, typically have the dollars that might be doing some, you know, private building and they want to make the home better. And then also they're doing it for their health, which is also just, it's an imperative thing. They've got to do it. So I think when you're looking at your contacts and people you're networking with, look into that avenue because I think it'd be helpful.
Caroline Blazowski is her name. She is known as America's Healthy Home Expert. The company is My Healthy Home, and you can learn more about everything she's doing. You can also reach out to her. If you have questions, want to work with her, healthyhomeexpert.com is the website, healthyhomeexpert.com. Caroline, thank you very much for the decades of work that you're doing to make our world a healthier place, one home at a time. I appreciate you for doing that. And thanks for coming by here and sharing your knowledge on Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, two a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today, you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember three words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.